Hi, thanks for listening to the Troubadour Tapes podcast. This is a monthly podcast where we invite writers from the San Diego Troubadour magazine to hold their interviews live at Berkeley Sound Studio. I'm Jeff Berkeley. Once the interview's over, the writer will use it to write the cover story for the San Diego Troubadour magazine. But you get to hear it live, as it happens, in their own words. This month, our featured guest is San Diego icon Ingrid Croce. Her interviewer will be Bart Mendoza, a writer for several San Diego publications, as well as an amazing singer-songwriter with the Shambles. He started at the beginning.
Well, let me ask you, what brought you to San Diego in the first place?
Well, Jim had just been on the road for about 2 years, and he had been asked by the Johnny Carson people if he would be the summer replacement. Cheech Marin of Cheech and Chong became good friends, and he, in fact, he was a potter and like I was, and we got to know each other, and he said, you know, I'd like to do a movie with you, Jim. And so Jim was going to do a movie with Cheech. And there were a lot of opportunities in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. But when we went to L.A., we felt just so out of sort. We just didn't fit in L.A. I mean, I had, I think, a pair of jeans and a T-shirt. And Jim had probably a pair of jeans and maybe a work shirt that he used for performing. And literally, we had nothing. So we thought, well this isn't, we're not going to make it here. So he had played at the Funky Quarters in the Gas Lamp. And that was an opportunity, he thought, you know, to see. And of course, we'd spent some time in Ocean Beach that weekend, and we thought Ocean Beach might be a place we could be. So we ended up in San Diego and liked it. It felt like it was the right place for us to be, like kind people, you know. Mm-hmm. There was the black, and there was other things going on, and it just felt right. So we moved to Point Loma, which wasn't too far away. And that's how we ended up in San Diego.
And this is where she'd stay, thankfully for us. But I'm sure not for the same reasons she planned on staying.
It's an interesting path that occurred, because the first thing that happened, I had met Larry Himmel.
Huge San Diego music fan, weatherman, host of San Diego at Large.
Believe it or not, at the end of the pier on Niagara Street in Ocean Beach. And that was the last night I had spent with Jim Croce. And he left the next day for a very short makeup tour and went to he was in Natchitoches, Louisiana, when his plane crashed. So I get a call from my mother at, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning, our time, or 4 o'clock. She was watching the Today Show. She told me, Jim, you know, she said, oh, have you heard the news? No. I said, oh, did Jim die? I mean, it was just instinctive, and I knew that he was flying a lot, and it was just one of those weird feelings. And she said, yes, Jim passed away. And I said, and everyone on the plane, yes. So it was like kind of a shock. Not kind of, it was a shock. I'd spent my last weekend with Jim in the Gas Lamp, and I had no idea, honestly, when I got that phone call, where life would leave me.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but this is a great time for me to edit in this little comment that Bart Mendoza made later on in the interview, but I just think it works really cool here.
What you have done for musicians with the copyright stuff alone, that they should be given parades for you, but...
Okay. That was Bart's comment, but here's why I wanted to play it for you now.
I guess we could say that the next 12 years of our lives, I fought, AJ was a baby, for the music rights. Because I had not received any money, and then all of a sudden, this is the strange part, I received a check for what seemed like an enormous amount of money. It probably was $2,000 or $3,000 at the time. But it seemed like more money. It was more money than we'd ever had. And I thought, wow, you know, this is great, but Jim never got this money while he was alive. Why not? So I asked for what I thought was something typical, because I didn't know much about the industry, the A word. I asked for an audit. And it turned out that that was the worst third thing I could have said, because all of these people in the music industry had been in charge of our money, had been in charge of our estate, had been in charge of our lives financially, and pretty much our lives. And so I felt it was really important to fight for artists' rights. It just came to me that that was the most important thing I could do. So I kind of put everything else on hold and started fighting.
And fight she did, improving artists' rights and changing laws to protect artists. Like, she made sure no artist could be held in perpetuity. In other words, no one can keep an artist hostage in a bad contract forever. That's a big deal. But then, after that's over,
what can I do?
What next?
Invited a friend to visit and said, "Hey, here's my resume. What can I do? I'm an artist. I'm a singer. I don't know anything about other things. I've just been through 12 years of litigation. What do I do?" And we sat down, and I made her some blintzes. And she said, "This is what you should do." And I went, open a restaurant. And the next day, I got a business license. I moved to the corner of 5th and University and opened a restaurant.
And from there, it was a combination of hard work, smart business moves based on a love of San Diego and a faith in the artists and patrons here. Still, though,
at this point,
what next?
Croce's is the downtown icon. I mean, there's nothing else downtown that is quite as associated with San Diego as your restaurant. How do you feel about that coming to fruition, I guess is what I'm trying to say?
I don't think I could be any happier. And it wasn't really planned out. I didn't have a business plan. I had no idea what I was doing. I was just basically made it like my home. I brought all my stuff from my home. And then we realized what we needed to do was because there was nothing else in the gas lamp, we needed to build the downtown. Because people wouldn't come downtown for a restaurant and a jazz bar. And there was no other live music except right around the corner at Patrick's. And there was a spaghetti factory. So then the dream, I mean, initially when I went down there, it was the last place that Jim Croce and I had ever been. And so when my friend called me, when I got thrown out of the corner of 5th and University, she said, "There's a perfect place for you. Just come on down. There's an open storefront and come look at it." And I went down to the corner of 5th and F, and it was the same corner where Jim and I had paused and talked about the opportunity to open a restaurant, and it was an omen. So there we were. There was Croce's just in the very beginning, and all of a sudden, it became an opportunity to build the community I'd always dreamed of, to offer live music, to offer musicians a place to play, which is what Jim and I really needed when we were young. And I think because of the initial purpose, and I think that's really, really important, is to think about, you know, success is different for everyone, but when you look at what purpose means to you, what do you really want to do? Well, the purpose was there, and the success has come out of the result of having a purpose, to be able to build live music, to serve a community, to bring great food and live music at the same time so that people can enjoy their experience and have a memorable time, to do what we used to do back in the 60s.
Now, that was the dream. But how she did it was pretty cool. And Ingrid may have been the only one who could really pull it off.
Was it hard to get people to come down originally?
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, if you'll remember, Horton Plaza opened at the same time that Croce's opened. Mm-hmm. And I remember being called and written, got a letter from Horton Plaza telling me, "Would you like to come to Horton Plaza?" I thought maybe I'd done something right. I hadn't made a penny, but I thought maybe I'd done something right because Horton Plaza asked me to come, a shopping center mall. You know, I was thrilled. Went into Horton Plaza, and it turned out that this was pre-Starbucks territory. So I did extremely well at Horton Plaza. And in fact, I did so well that I could pay for Croce's. So
Was that a cart or a shop?
No, it was a store. It was 313 square feet. Five sinks, 313 square feet. Hardly enough room to sell our... We sold poppers, which were muffins. They were a meal, not just a muffin. They were 12 to 16 ounces. We sold blintzes. We sold everything, but we made everything at the restaurant at Croce's, you know, that because there was not really a kitchen space there, and sold everything at Horton. And then I would walk people back to the corner of 5th and F. People were afraid to cross 4th Avenue. It was just not the kind of place that families went, you know. But to me, coming from downtown Philadelphia, it looked great. You could see the ocean. I mean, the streets look clean to me, you know. San Diego's a clean city.
Okay. Did you get that? she would talk to customers at her little shop there at Horton Plaza while they were eating her great food and talk them into following her into the part of town that everybody thought was dangerous. And believe me, I remember this. My folks would never, and I mean never, let us go downtown, especially at night. If there was a concert going on down there or something, forget about it, man. You just weren't going to be allowed to go down there. But that's how she did it. It was one walk at a time, and she'd be bragging on her food or San Diego or the music scene here the whole time during the whole walk and show them what her vision was. Well, truthfully, she probably bragged on one musician a little more than the others.
AJ. AJ, at that time, he was 15 when I first opened the restaurant, 16 when we opened Croce's. And his music at the time, he really wanted to, he was playing jazz. And he said, "Mom, I think we should have a jazz bar." And I said, "Okay, well," and he started down in the basement with you, Bart. Mm-hmm. And he was bringing in different acts, and some of the acts that he was bringing in were kind of Rami Kay and the Swinging Gates and some of the music back then. And he really felt, you know, it was really cool to be in Paris in the jazz capes. And he had had that experience when we used to travel a lot. Mm-hmm. And he'd had the experience of being in these jazz capes, and he thought, how cool would that be, you know? And he was a mod at the time and, you know, had the scooter and the whole thing. And so he said, that's what we should do. And it worked out that Daniel Jackson and Hollis Gentry and a lot of the, really, the people that were playing music at the time in San Diego were really jazz fanatics, you know. And that's how we began the club. You know, we didn't really demand that people play jazz, but that seemed to be the music that was available at the time. And then, of course, when I met my husband, Jimmy Rock, we recognized that we really needed to expand all kinds of music because the downtown still hadn't grown. This was 1988. We opened the Croce's Top Hat Bar and Grill and expanded into that new location of Mercantile. And so we were able then to bring in singer-songwriters. We could bring in rhythm and blues. We could bring in, music from New Orleans. We could bring in any kind of music we wanted. But all we needed to do was to find a way to get people downtown because nobody would come. And so we figured if we expanded the music availability and also opened a second restaurant and a place for people upstairs to do live music as well and more food and large parties, we'd be able to build the downtown. So that's what we did. We invested in the gas lamp and we just kept expanding as we could.
Have you ever considered expanding outside of San Diego? Has that ever been an option?
You know, it's so funny you say that because everybody comes to Croce's and they say, oh, we could use one in New York, or would you please come to Chicago? And, you know, this is such a homegrown business that if I wasn't there, it wouldn't be Croce's. So I'm not saying we'd never do it, but every time that Jim and I have thought about doing it, we go, how could we possibly have the quality of what we have at Croce's? How could we oversee it? You know, it's just meant to be a mom and pop business. That's all I can say. To do it right, you got to do it this way.
And this question, this one really got me.
Do you miss performing yourself?
I miss music. I miss singing more than just about anything. It's like having an appendage gone for me. It really is that serious. But you know, having had it gone for so many years, you know, the only time I'll ever sing is in front of my husband, but sometimes my grandson hears me, but I really don't think that's going to happen for me again. So I've kind of come to the conclusion that I had vocal cord operation. Let me tell you a little bit about my career. After I sang with Jim and after litigation, well, even during litigation, I was, I started singing for a friend of Jim's who went on the road with him, Johnny. And he said to me, "Ingrid, I have a record company, Riva Records, that I'd like you to meet." And I went and I met with Riva Records. They asked to do an album with me, with the Rod Stewart group. The only records they did was Rod Stewart at the time, and
John Cougar.
John Cougar Mellencamp came after me. Rod Stewart, Ingrid Croce, and John Cougar Mellencamp. And I did a record with them called Reaching Out at the time. And right after I went on the road to try to do it, I had a vocal cord operation, which didn't work. And then after that, I had another one. So this was in 1983, after litigation. And in 1984, when I had the second operation, I just couldn't sing anymore. So when I say that, it's been since then till now without being able to sing. And something happened when I woke up from that operation where there had always been music in my mind, I mean, in my brain, so to speak. It's hard to explain, but, you know, I'd wake up every day and there were songs. There was music. There was a soundtrack to my life. And I woke up, and when I woke up from the second operation, there was no music. There was no sound. And it was as if things had just stopped. I know that sounds weird. I don't know if anybody else wakes up with music in their head.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
But it just stopped. And so it was like there was a silence that I had to fill. And I filled it, I think, adequately by bringing the sounds of the restaurant and by bringing the sounds of the music. And even though I don't listen to music as much as I ought to and I'd like to, because I have to do it. You know, back then, strangely enough, Jim and I listened to music, but we were making so much music as singer-songwriters that we didn't necessarily listen to a lot of music. We just made our own. So when that music stopped, it kind of changed life for me. And now, so you ask me, am I missing it? Yes, of course, I miss the singing of the music. There's a feeling that you get when you sing that nothing feels like that, you know, nothing does. But I feel very happy. I feel very content, and I'm thrilled that I can give singer-songwriters and artists the opportunity to make their music at Croce's. That's a great, very fulfilling feeling to be on the other side of that, and admire music and musicians so much that it's also a great gift.
Such a beautiful way to look at that. And she's accomplished so much and overcome so much adversity and so many obstacles. I was so glad when Bart thought to ask this question.
What are you proudest of in the grand scheme of things?
That's a good question. You know, I think in really looking back at this, I know this sounds a little bit weird, but it's kind of picking up where I left off. You know, I think that in going back and thinking about it, I don't know how it happened, but meeting my husband on table 21 and starting all over again and really picking up all the pieces, you know, because going back and doing this biography right now, I've had a very good memory. And I always felt I needed to document my life. I can't explain it to you, but from the time I was little, I wrote diaries and I wrote everything down every single day of my life. I taped my life. So in 1987, when I met my husband, for whatever reason, I stopped taping and I started living. And I think if I go back to that time and go forward, I think the thing I'm most proud of is that I'm actually doing that. It's exciting.
The Troubadour Tapes are brought to you by the San Diego Troubadour Magazine. That's sandiegotroubadour.com. And by Berkeley Sound, berkeleysound.com. I'm Jeff Berkeley. On behalf of Bart Mendoza and Ingrid Croce and everybody at the San Diego Troubadour, thank you all so much for listening. See you next time.
Berkeley.
Berkeley.
Berkeley Sound.
Berkeley.
If I could talk.
Berkeley. 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 BerkeleySound.com.
BerkeleySound.